Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses or opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help others, alcoholics, to achieve sobriety. Hi, my name is Barbara and I am an alcoholic. Would you pause with me for a moment and hold those near and dear to you in your consciousness, and then we'll say the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And I've asked Cole to come up.
Woo! Look at that, Cole! Woo!
I heard that. Man's Cole Word, and I'm an alcoholic. This is how it works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders. But many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. And some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, and powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power, and that one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We ask his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. Number one. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood it. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaim, "What? An order? I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if He were sovereign.
Thank you, Cole. Would our visitors and our guests like to be recognized? Just raise your hand and tell us your first name.
I'm Josh, I'm a recovered alcoholic.
Hey, hi, Josh.
Hi, Josh.
I'm Bobo, I'm recovered.
Hi, Bobo.
Bobo.
I'm Derek, I'm recovered alcoholic.
Hi, Derek.
I'm Jacob, I'm recovered alcoholic.
Hi, Chad.
Wade,
recovered
alcoholic. Wade. Hey, Andy.
I'm Kenny, recovered
alcoholic.
Hi, Kenny.
I'm Eric, recovered alcoholic.
Hi, Eric.
I'm Brent, recovered alcoholic.
Hi, Brent. Welcome.
I'm recovered alcoholic.
Hey, Kelly. And we have a delightful young woman here. Hi, Paige.
I'm Paige, I'm recovered alcoholic.
Hi, Paige. I always hate to embarrass when we've matured and have become an adult, but when I saw her, I said, my gosh, I knew you when you were that big. You're just as beautiful, as is her father. Ben and I have known each other for many, many years. You know, there's just, I don't know, I think it's sometimes people are born again to be together. And I feel that with a lot of people in the program, and Ben's one of them. He just kind of comes in and out of my life. So I'm so glad that he came to share his story tonight. Come on, Ben.
All right. Ben.
You know, it's not very wise to poke fun at people when you're first on the mic. My name is Ben. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My home group is the Primary Purpose Group, Dallas, Texas. And I'm also a member of the Drug Addicts Anonymous Group, Sunlight of the Spirit, in Keller, Texas. We use the big book. Yeah. Oh, let's see. Where do I start? Oh... at the beginning, I think I need to probably throw a couple of disclaimers out there first. No, lots changed over the years. You know, I know 95% of the people in this room I know, and I have history with so many of you. I've learned so many things in recovery and just in life in general. I mean, I've got people in here that were at my father's funeral. I have people in here that Cole married my daughter. Obviously,
what's your the service?
You know, whatever. I think the one thing that I've learned, especially in this last 17 months that I've been back in, is what my primary purpose is, and that's for the newcomer. I wasn't sure if you guys were going to have any newcomers, so I brought my own. I don't really like speaking. I really don't like podiums. And when I came back in this time, I knew that if I stayed sober for a minute, that my sponsor was going to have me speak from time to time. And I told him up front, one of the prerequisites I had when I was interviewing sponsors, so I was doing that whole deal, and I told him, I said, as long as you don't ever ask me to speak, you know, don't ever ask me to speak at Alcoholics Anonymous or wherever. And he just kind of chuckled and laughed and walked away. And a handful of us in here, I think we carry the message right now to about 100 people a week. You know, so it's been kind of routine. There's a lot of drugs in my story. I realize this is Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm going to do the best I can to not step outside of your traditions. I will do that to the best of my ability, but sometimes stuff comes out. to paint a very clear picture of what my life was like, it would be very difficult for me to leave out some of that activity. And it is mentioned sometimes in the big book, so I'll try to avoid it to the best of my ability. I don't want to offend old Jerry back there. It's really good to see you, Jerry, Bud, Judy, Sharon. You know, there was always something a little bit wrong. You know, as I was growing up, I came from a broken family. And I always knew and identified, as I look back now, I can identify what the big book talks about, a spiritual malady, okay? I knew there was some wiring or something inside of me that was, it was just a little bit skewed. It was a little bit different than what I thought the norm was, okay? I didn't feel like I matched up with normal people, you know? There was a lot of fear. I was the kid in the neighborhood that that all the guys would pick on. I was getting my ass handed to me on a regular basis, let's put it that way. And I lived in this constant state of fear of people. And I somehow conned my older brother into buying a fifth of Crown Royal. I had worked out, you know, I had planned one of those weekends where I'm staying at this guy's house and he's telling his parents that he's staying over here at such and such. And so we had this weekend where nobody really knew where we were except my brother, and he was supplying the alcohol. And so that was the first time that I had been introduced to alcohol. And I remember taking the first couple of drinks and thinking I really didn't like the taste of it. But I continued drinking it because once I had like about the second one in me, all of that fear that I had, all of that crazy, screwy wiring somehow got wired correctly, and I was able to look the world in the eye and be the man that I thought that I was supposed to be. You would find me at that particular night, I was out in the front yard of this house that we were at, fighting with the guys that were whipping my butt all the time. So in essence, I had a psychic change. Okay, I had a psychic change from the alcohol. It got me to the place where I always felt that I had to be. Over the years, I really didn't stick with alcohol. I guess it was my generation. You know, it was more about, I wanted to separate myself from the adults that were in my life. And you know, they were drinking. And in my generation, it was more about, back then it was, you know, smoking some pot and, you know, experimenting with these drugs and stuff. And whatever it really took, it really didn't matter what it was when I first started. Because, see, back then it was fun. There was a few years there, and even some later, some of the time it was fun. You know, later on, obviously, all of that changed. And I started paying dearly for it, and so did the people in my family and all my loved ones, the people who cared about me. Over the next few years, there's really not a, you know, my smoking pot, obviously it progressed into everything imaginable. There's really not too much out there that I didn't do. But alcohol was always kind of right there. It was kind of like safety net, because I could always go get alcohol, you know, at the store. I didn't have to put myself into the hood. I don't mean to look at you, Bobo. It was a little bit safer. It was a little bit safer because I could just go skim a little from Dad's. You know, I could get into the liquor cabinet and I could get a little bit. I'm laughing because you've done that. I could skim a little bit, you know, and then I wasn't so paranoid that I was going to get busted, you know, by the police or whatever. And so, on through the years, things just kind of progressed, and eventually it progressed into methamphetamine. And there was a lot of stuff that happened before 19, but I have done a lot of drinking and a lot of blackouts and a lot of crazy stuff, and I don't remember a whole lot of it. I know that the facts are that I was a troubled teenager, and my parents had no earthly idea what to do with me. They were terrified. My dad was sick on a regular basis because he did not know what to do. He did not know what was wrong with his son. His son had found a solution. Okay, I found a solution that was working to a certain extent for a good period of time. It got me out of that all those crazy feelings, you know, that internal condition that I didn't even know what that was, the spiritual malady and all that stuff till later on. And I'll get into that in a little bit. Go band. So everything kind of started progressing on, and my parents finally, they stepped in. I think I was 16 years old. I'd robbed a gun store. I had this crazy notion in my head that I was going to be this drug kingpin thing, you know, this guy like Carlos Escobar, whatever, and some Colombian drug lord. You know, I'm just this white dude, you know, living in the hood, and I'm going to be this big time drug dealer. So we decided to break into this gun store, and we stole a truckload full of pistols and I don't know what, all kind of stuff, and I got caught. To make a long story short, I got caught. And so my parents stepped in, and they found this independent, fundamental Baptist boys' home, hardcore, up in Troy, Indiana, you know, and they ripped me out of this life that I thought I had and put me in this boys' home, this independent, fundamental Baptist boys' home, and it was, you know, it was all preaching. You know, it was hardcore. It was fire and brimstone. I loved it. Well, I hated it. Look, understand this. I hated it at first. Like, I was devastated because everything that I had knew, my comfort, all my friends, my bros, they ripped me out of all that. And so I got thrown into this situation halfway across the world, and after about a week of being there, after about a week of being there and hearing preaching, this guy preach, something started happening. Something started changing a little bit in me. It was God kind of knocking on my door for the first time in my life, you know, and my whole life, and it changed. I at that point in my life, I was 16 years old. I got saved, and I said, okay, this is what I want to do after a few months of me being there, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. I want to stay here and work at this boys' home. And help guys, you know, because it was fun, it was different. I wasn't getting in trouble, and it was working for me at the time. In a weird series of events, the place got shut down, and came back to Texas, and within a matter of probably a couple of days, while I was gone, all of my friends had graduated from pot smoking to methamphetamine. And the very first time that I did methamphetamine, I was off and running, and for about 2 years there. I was tweaking up. I was doing a massive amounts of methamphetamine, and we had gotten hooked up with this drug dealer and all this craziness. We were stealing stuff and trading for dope and all this stuff. And I immediately, for a 2 year period, I mean, I just didn't sleep a whole lot, you know. And my life changed real quick. You know, it wasn't just a casual, you know, getting drunk and throwing up. I was gone from the house for the whole 2 years, sleeping on people's couches. Wrecking cars and this and that, and one day I had already gotten I got like fired by my drug dealer. Like, he wouldn't even sell me drugs anymore because I was doing so much and causing so much of a scene. And I'm not sure how it came to fruition, but I knew that I needed help, and I had wrecked my car. I'd been up for like 7 days. I wrecked my car, and I decided, okay, I need to go to rehab. And so that was my first day in a rehab in Cedar Hill, Texas, I think, or DeSoto or something like that, Red Oak. And so I go to this rehab. By then I was 19 years old, and I honestly wanted things to change, you know. And I heard a lot of stuff in that rehab. I remember some of the things I heard. I remember them telling us that, I think the statistics back then, I think they may have said maybe 10% of the people in the rehab were going to stay sober. And I distinctly remember sitting in that rehab thinking, oh, I'm good. I know that I'm going to be this 10%. I'm going to be the 10% that was going to stay sober. Meanwhile, they were telling us things. This was my first introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous and the Big Book, the Steps, the Sponsorship. You know, and I remember them suggesting these things, and I'm kind of like, eh. You know, I didn't identify. Here's the problem. I didn't identify as an alcoholic back then. You know, and they were telling me that if I was a drug addict, that I would probably never ever be able to drink and things like this. And I'm 19 years old. You know, I wasn't really hearing all that. The consequences weren't severe enough to get my attention yet. And so, I got out of that rehab and quickly discovered. That's when I really discovered alcohol for the first time. My dad, or my brother, he got married at our house, and my dad had accidentally ordered like 6 extra cases of tequila, and we had like, yeah, it's crazy. We had a margarita machine that I don't know, we just ended up with it, you know, and all this margarita mix. And so there for, I don't know, probably a good 6 months or so, it was a fiesta going on over at Patterson Residence. It was fun. Seriously, we would make ice chests full of margaritas, and we could make them as strong as we wanted. And I can remember at that period of time, about a six-month period went by, and I'm, you know, just gradually kind of stealing just little bits here and there until eventually it was gone. I can remember driving around Duncanville, Texas, and that's when the blackout started, okay? And I can remember driving around in my kidneys, at my back. There was something going on. I was, 20 years old, and I had to drive around with a pillow in my car because I was drinking so much alcohol. You know, and looking back now, I recognize what was going on. That led me right back into the normal stuff, and I was starting to get in trouble a lot. You know, my parents would step in, and my mom, she got me a job down in Corpus Christi. She said, if you can clean up, you can go move down to Corpus Christi, and I've got this guy that's going to give you a job. And I'm thinking, man, that's probably what I need. If I can just move away from, like, all my friends, and I'm going to go down here and live, and everything will be fine. You know, I was going to be making, like, $11 an hour or something, and, you know, it was going to be great. And that's what I did. I moved down there, and there was only one small problem is Ben showed up one more time, you know, and did what Ben did, because I still, see, my disease is going to get treated one way or the other. This internal condition that the book talks about, the spiritual malady, it's going to get treated one way or another. It's either going to get, now, it's either going to get treated with a spiritual experience as a result of working all 12 steps, or it's going to get treated with more drinking or more drugs or whatever you got to get me to the point that I need to be okay. And so, you know, the whole thing just kind of continued the way that it was going for years. Not a lot changed over the next several years. I graduated from snorting cocaine to crack cocaine, and somebody taught me how to drive down to the hood and buy crack cocaine. You know, and I thought that was my solution. I thought that's what I needed. You know, and there was really not a whole lot of thought there for a little bit of how to quit or whatnot. The consequences started racking up. You know, at this time I had my daughter was born. And, man, that was scary. That was scary business. I was in a position to be a father figure to this child, and I know that my life is in shambles. I'm already well addicted to crack. And what would happen is I'm getting a lot of trouble smoking the crack, and then I would somehow pull away from it for a little bit, probably because I was out of money or out of things to steal or pawn, okay? And I'd pull away for a minute, and I think, well, you know, I haven't smoked any crack in a while, and maybe if I can just go have a beer, you know, to knock the edge off. Because, see, my internal condition was still not being treated. So if I can pull away for a little bit, and I'll just talk to myself, this time I'm just going to have one beer. I'm going to go to the whatever and have one, okay, maybe two. Maybe I'll just have two beers. Okay, and as soon as I started doing that, looking back now, I can see, because I have the allergy, that once I started, it kicked off the phenomenon of craving. I went on my spree, and I ended up back at the dope house. Looking at some of the situations that I put myself into, you know, I was rolling up to the dope house when my daughter was 3 years old, and she was in the car seat. You know, and that's disgusting. You know, and I knew that was wrong. I knew that there was something wrong with that, but I didn't know how to stop. And this continued on and on for a really long time. I'm going to skip up to like 1997, so right before I met you guys. I started getting tickets and bouncing in and out of jails and things like that. And I finally got arrested for possession of cocaine. And I got arrested, and I went through the whole process. I got put on probation, and I said, okay, I've obviously gotten into a lot of trouble. I'm going to quit. It never occurred to me that I may not be able to quit. And 2 weeks later, my dad had this lake house down at Lakeside Village, and 2 weeks later, I had just moved down here. I hadn't even come to AA here yet, and I was on this probation, and what happens? Ben Patterson shows up once again, you know, and it always started with one beer for me. I would drink a beer, boom, phenomenon of craving, and I'm off to the dope house. and I got arrested again for possession of cocaine, you know. And the state of Texas, they typically put you on probation so that you don't get into any more trouble. And I did. And it scared the hell out of me. And I'd already had a little bit of experience in Alcoholics Anonymous. In some of those years, I was bouncing out of a couple of different groups around town. The Duncanville group, the White House with Cersei down there, you know, and looking back now, it's amazing some of the people that God has put into my life. So I come down here and walk into the old Capitol here, the AA Capitol, and one of the first people that I met was Cole, you know, and for the next 5 years, well, let me back up. I knew that I needed a change. I knew that there was something majorly wrong with me. And my sponsor at the time sat down with me with the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and started taking me through the book, you know, taking me through the steps. And over a period of time, my life started getting pretty damn good. You know, it started getting real good. I haven't told this story in a long time. I had about 4 months of sobriety. And I had bounced in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous all over Texas for a little while, all over Dallas. And about a week after I was down here in the Lake Whitney group, there was this guy down here that I became friends with. And I had never seen, like I had been around Alcoholics Anonymous, but I had never actually met a human being that where I knew them outside, like in a irritable, restless, and discontent, and then they got better. I had never seen a human being that changed anybody. And I met somebody that I had known from the gift up in Irving, and I met him right here in this room. And I had known him from up there, and he was like this angry, big, huge, angry dude that everybody was terrified. I was terrified of this guy. We had been talking to the same girl, and you know, one of those deals. And I ran into him down here, and it was so cool because I like knew somebody. Like, oh man, you're like my best friend, you know. I've known him for years. I like seen him like a couple times at meetings up there, and we started hanging out. I had a sobering up buddy. It was cool. That was like the first time in my life that I saw this guy, and I would sit in meetings and listen to all this really cool stuff coming out of his mouth. And we started working together and hanging out, and we're crazy. Crazy as crazy can get. But we were having fun. For like the first time in my life, we were having a lot of fun in sobriety, kind of like what we all do now. And it was November of 1997, and there's this little country road out here. And he was living on the other side of the lake, and I went for a job interview. You know, I knew that, you got to understand, I had already been through probably on about steps 8 and 9. It was the first time in my life that I had ever stayed sober for 90 days. I got a 90-day chip. Man, I was on top of the world. I was excited. I was living large. You know, life was good. I just found God, you know, through the steps on that mountain over in Lakeside Village. And I went to Hillsboro for an interview one day and got this job. And man, I was excited. And I was driving back home, and I was out here on this country road, and he was driving to work, and we had a head-on collision, and he died, you know? And I was forced into a situation by my own making, my irresponsibility, to figure out to get closer to God. You know, I knew that this is way beyond all the suicide attempts. This is after all the suicide attempts and the craziness that we create in our lives. And I knew that if I wasn't honest, that I would never, ever survive this deal. And I was extremely honest about what happened. And I was at fault, you know. And the people of Alcoholics Anonymous scooped me up and wrapped their arms around me and loved me. And I stayed sober for another 5 years after that. And that was like a miracle, you know, that I could actually stay sober through, for me at the time, something so traumatic in my life, you know. And that was an amazing, he was an amazing guy, you know. And there was a long period of reconstruction spiritually and mentally for me to get through that and to still have, you know, to be still be able to look people in the eye, you know. But anyway, I'm going to jump into some stuff in the big book right now. I stayed down here for 5.5 years, and I left here because of a job and a housing situation. I needed to be living in Fort Worth, and I had to sell the lake house eventually and move up there full time. And, you know, I introduced myself as a recovered alcoholic and a recovered drug addict because that's what the big book Alcoholics Anonymous says for me to do. On page 85 in the big book, it talks about, how about let's just check it out and see what it says. It says, it is easy to let up on a spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. This spiritual condition, this internal condition, I'm always trying to fix it with, I'm always trying to fix the external in hopes that the internal will be okay. Okay? And I have to fix internally for everything that's on the outside to be okay. And I can get unrecovered real quick. I realize that I am not cured of alcoholism. If I quit doing the things, if I quit following the precise directions that this big book tells me that I must follow, if I'm a real alcoholic or a real dope fiend, I can get unrecovered real quick. I'm going to give you a great example of what that looks like. Before the meeting tonight, I came in and I went into the bathroom and I got on my knees. Like my sponsor have always told me that what I need to do. Because I have this tremendous fear around speaking in front of people. It's not about me. It's about God. All right, and this is God's message. And in 2002, you know, I did really good down here for a couple of years, guys. I really did. I was real involved. I was carrying the message over to the probation department. And then somewhere along the lines, I quit doing the things that I was supposed to be doing, and I started trying to adjust my external world via a female, okay, or several. And it really didn't work out the way that I wanted it to, you know, and I paid the ultimate price for it. At 5.5 years of sobriety, I would drive over here, and I was so terrified of people that I would walk into this meeting, and I would go directly to that bathroom, and I would sit there. This is just a regular meeting. There's nobody, me speaking, there's no nothing. This is a regular meeting. Just being in the room with another human being, I could not look the world in the eye. My internal condition was so severe that I would walk into this group, and I did this for more than a year, and I would go sit in that bathroom for about the first 5 or 10 minutes until I could get acclimated to being in the room, and then I would kind of gradually coast out here and sit in the back of the room and maybe say something if I had to try to impress somebody, something, you know, something. It was untreated alcoholism. I wasn't following any spiritual program of action that the first 100 set out for us to do. I wasn't doing any of the work that I was supposed to do so that I could be okay. And so, just like any great alcoholic would do, what I do, I call a doctor. Because there's something wrong with me, I call a doctor, and I walk into the psychiatrist's office, and I say, I have anxiety, I have fear, I'm hiding in bathrooms because I'm terrified to talk to people. Hey, no problem, we got something for that. Klonopin. It says take one every 4 hours. Man, that maybe it would have worked, I don't know. Because in my mind, I saw take four anytime you needed it. You know? And so in a relatively short amount of time, you already know the story. It kicked off my allergy one more time. But see, by now, God had put a job in my life, making a little bit of money. And so now I had the money to finance all these the craziness. And when I was here in 97, I really believed that life couldn't get any worse than that. I really believed that it couldn't possibly get that much more crazy. And I assure you, for 8 years, it got really, really bad. I mean, I never dreamed in a million years of how bad that it could get. And I would bounce in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous. You guys have something really special down here. I know this group. I know this is a big book group. But I will assure you, and I'm here to report to you, that every group is not a big book group. and they do not follow the principles that are laid out by the first 100. And it's sad. When I sobered up this time, I got hooked up with some big book people, you know. Over an 8-year period, I picked up 40 desire chips. 40. It's not that I didn't want to be sober. I wanted to be sober so bad, I took a loaded gun and put it to my chest and pulled the trigger. I tried to shoot myself in the heart. It's not that I didn't want to do this, but this program doesn't work for people who just want it. It's a spiritual program of action that requires you to get off your ass and do some work. You got to work the steps. I'm going to read some more. This is a quote. I did my homework before I came down here. I'm going to steal it, and we're going to have two of them tonight. This is from Bob Light. This is at the Canyon Conference in 1985, I believe. November 1st, I think. I think that was the last time he ever spoke. It says, I got to the point in my life where the fellowship alone was not enough to keep me sober. Man, I just researched, I was looking for Bob White before I came down here because I know how influential this man was to probably, I think, of the majority of the people that consider this their home group. And I didn't even know this man. I didn't even know him. But I know that I was in his sponsorship lineage for several years, from Bazans and the Maloney's and the Joneses and the whatevers. That, what he said, where the fellowship was not alone, was not enough alone to keep me sober. I couldn't, as soon as I heard him say that, I knew that that was exactly how I'd felt for 8 years, because this is what the truth is, guys, is I would go do my thing. Allergy would kick off, and I'm not a craving. I'd go on a spree. I'd wake up the next morning feeling guilty and saying, I'm never, ever going to do this again. And I would bounce into Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'd walk into the room, and guess what they said? Keep coming back. Don't take another drink in between meetings. And that's all they could tell me. I was going there for help. And all they could, the best advice that they could give me was keep coming back. Don't have a drink and come back tomorrow. And I heard this for years, and I wanted that to work. It's not that I didn't want it to work. I wanted it to honestly work. I knew I needed something, but it didn't work. Because see, I had already crossed that line where I had lost the power of choice on whether or not I'm going to be able to pull that off. You see what I'm saying? I can't not have a drink in between meetings. If my disease, my spiritual malady is left untreated by God, I'm going to twist off again. That's what we do. I drink no matter what. Yeah, and I tried to stay sober on slogans. Man, it just didn't work for me. And I know a lot of people, and I have a lot of respect for a lot of people, that stuff will work for. And I'm totally down with that. If that works for you, then that's kick ass. I still love you. Just don't sponsor any of my guys with that bullshit. Sorry. The bottom line is this. The big book talks about it very clear. We don't all come in here the same way. We come in different degrees. There's hard drinkers in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous that need to be here. Do they need to maybe do the steps and have a spiritual experience in a relatively fast manner to get their life back in order? No, they don't. They can probably pull that off. They can probably go to 90 meetings in 90 days and be okay. That's not my experience. I can't do that. At 39 years old, I ended up in my 8th rehab. I had a great job. You know, I had already somehow manipulated the family into letting my daughter move back in with me. Because, you know, externally, if you have a little bit of money, externally, you can make your world look okay. And inside, I was dying. I was dying from untreated alcoholism. At 39 years old, I ended up back in a rehab. And that was like my 8th visit in rehab. And all these punk-ass kids, sorry. All these young guys, you know. And I just, I was like, man, how did I end up back in a rehab again? What in the hell did I miss? I've got a big book that's falling apart. I know what's in it. I did it. I do. I got two of them that are falling apart. I read it a bunch of times. A whole bunch. I'm sitting in rehab the second to last night I'm in there, and I knew the answer to my life was somewhere in that big book. I knew it was there. I had people take me through the book. I knew it was there, but for some reason, I couldn't find that key that would work for me. And these cats, man, it's a Friday night, and they had these outside meetings come through this rehab. It's a good group of young guys, man. This CA. I knew CA was Cocaine Anonymous. I was like, oh great, what are they gonna do? Write their own fucking book? I don't know. I wasn't into that. I already knew I had experience. 5 solid years of being sober, and I did good work for at least 2 of those years. Half measures, fellas, nothing. So these guys, the Friday night, these cats roll up in there, CA, it's Cocaine Anonymous. I'm like, oh great, here we go. There was only one difference. They were carrying big books. Man, that was crazy for me. That was one hell of a night. That was one hell of an experience. I sat in a meeting. It's called Stickman. It's a foundation meeting is all it is. It's steps 1, 2, and 3 is all it is. They draw this diagram. I draw it all the time and everywhere. If I'm bored, I just draw it. They drew this diagram on the board. These arrows, it kind of symbolizes a cycle going over and over. Allergy, phenomenon of craving, spree, consequences. This is my truth. It says we cannot differentiate the true from the false. That's my truth. Then what does it say? Firm resolution. Man, they set the hook. Firm resolution. How many times did I wake up after a spree and I said, I will never, ever do this again? I can't tell you how many times. I had 40 desire chips. Maybe 1,000 times that I actually said that I would never, ever drink again. But what happened? What did I do? I drank again. And there was in this cycle, in this diagram, right beyond the firm resolution, is IRD. Irritable, restless, and discontent, baby. Spiritual malady. And they circled it. And they said, this is your real problem. And it was like fireworks went off in my head. I was just like, how in the hell have I been around this fellowship and have been around for so long and I couldn't tie all this stuff together? What have I missed? And I immediately was so attracted to this, I grabbed one of these guys after the meeting and I said, I need a sponsor. And he said, okay, well, I'll sponsor you. And I said, well, I got to have to tell you first, I've been sober 5 years. I got my... Let me tell you how you need to sponsor me. Because I got this big book, pages are all flying around, kind of like Josh's little war deal over there. And the pages are all whatever, and duct tape and all this stuff. And I'm going to sit down with my brand new sponsor, and I'll tell him how he's going to sponsor me. And he let me know real quick how this deal was going to work. I was going to shut up, and he was going to carry me through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous the way his sponsor did with him. And this guy was on fire. And he sat me down about every other day. Actually, I checked right out of rehab. The counselor said, you don't need to be here. You do not need to be here. You're wasting your money and your time. And you need to go back home and patch things up with your daughter. And so I checked out of rehab and started meeting my sponsor. And he started carrying me through the book. Started reading it to me just like Cole did years ago. Started working those steps. And in the process of him reading this big book to me, he would get to certain points in the big book, and we would stop and we would talk about these things. And there were some real important, some key things that he pointed out to me that he said that I probably need to emphasize on that I had never really, I think I had probably glazed over. It's kind of like how it works, in modern AA or whatever, we hear how it works so many times. There's so much really good stuff in there. I just kind of hear stuff and it just kind of goes in one ear and out the other, and I don't really see the importance of it. And so the sponsor would stop me and say, let's talk about this right here for a minute. I'm going to read this one little deal. On page 14 it says, for if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life, through, and I got to go slow because I understand I did a lot of drugs, through work, and self-sacrifice for others, he could not certainly survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. If he did not work, he would surely drink, and if he drank, he would surely die. Man, that was like a light bulb went off in my head. I was like, he starts talking about sponsorship. He starts talking about working the steps. He said, well, he starts talking about sponsorship. And he said, first off, if you're going to sponsor eventually, you got to have a message to carry before you start carrying something, you know? And I said, well, you know, I really don't think with my track record that I'm going to be able to hang out for, you know, a year, you know, because I walk in and I look at the steps and I see 12 steps, you know, and I'm tweaker and skitzer and I'm thinking 12 months in a year. You know, if I work a step a month and join the step a month club, then, you know, maybe I'll, I tried that. I can't do that. I don't have that kind of mentality. I don't have the time to do that. Because remember, I have already crossed that invisible line into no choice, you see? There's an italicized paragraph on page 24. My sponsor told me we were going to get through the steps really quick. He said, you're going to be through all 12 steps in about 4, maybe 5 weeks. All 12 steps. I'm like, golly, it's kind of dramatic, isn't it? What is this, AAA? Advanced Alcoholics Anonymous or what? Hey, that's the AAA sticker. It's Advanced Alcoholics Anonymous. He's like, wow. He said, well, we don't have to necessarily go that fast because, man, that fourth step, huh? 40 years old, that fourth step may take me a month or two. And he said, you ain't got a month or two, bro. He said, how many times have you told yourself and all the family, your family members and everybody around you that you would never, ever drink again, and you went out and drank again? And I started to add them up. It's like, I mean, there was thousands of times. He lit the fire into my ass. He told me, he said, it doesn't matter how bad you want to stay sober. If you don't do this work in a relatively quick fashion, you're probably going to think drinking another beer is going to be okay. This is the paragraph that another one of those paragraphs he read to me that was super important. It says, the fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower practically becomes non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. I have just, in the first time of my life, involved in this recovery stuff, been put on a time frame. They have now just started a stopwatch, and it said a week to a month. And they told me that a week to a month, I'm probably going to start forgetting the pain and the suffering and humiliation of what just happened. Great example, 1994. I'm doing pretty good, got a couple of minutes of sobriety, maybe a week, maybe two. Get into a fight with a girlfriend, talk myself into going to Chili's to have what? Just one. The craving, the spree, end up in Oak Cliff. Wake up in the hospital with 9mm in the back of my head. Surely that would be enough. That consequence is so severe that that would be enough for me to never ever do it again, right? But what happened? I did it again. Insanity. I never got treated. I never came back to Alcoholics Anonymous. Never found God. They painted a picture of me on step one on that diagram. They painted this picture, and I related so well. And that guy was standing on stage that night, and he said, if you can relate to this, you're probably not going to stay sober. I don't care how bad you want this to happen in your life, especially your track record, you're probably not going to have the ability to do that. You're probably going to need to have a spiritual experience as a result of working all 12 steps. I got busy. My life depended upon it. I had wrecked and ruined and everything and everybody around me. Another quote. Oh, this is so... I can't believe I wasn't around when this guy was around. You're going to really like this one, Eric. You will. This is from Bob White as well. Before God uses a man in his service, he reduces him to zero. That was in 1981. This cat was freaking talking some shit. That's some good stuff. Because I understand that. I've got 10 minutes. I want to talk about what it's like, so I'm going to skip ahead. Basically, what happened is I got through the work. and they told me that I was going to start sponsoring people. And I'm like, man, I got 2 months of sobriety. I'm not going to sponsor anybody. It's crazy. It's okay. He said funny things like that when I made demands on my sponsor. Okay, well, go drink. Go smoke some crack. And I believed him. And so here I am. I'm in Fort Worth. And I still got my great job. I'm sitting in Fort Worth and sitting on my couch. Got about 2 months of sobriety. And I said, you know, I probably better follow some direction. I probably better get off my couch and quit watching TV and drive my ass back over to that rehab where I know that I'm welcome and go up there and help a dude that just walked in, this crack-smoking, fool, drunk, alcoholic that maybe can't read. Maybe I'm not going to sponsor somebody. Maybe I'm just going to go read the big book to somebody. Get out of myself. One of the other things they emphasize, selfishness and self-centeredness. It's going to whip your butt. Chapter 7, intensive work, what is it? Quoted. As intensive work with other alcoholics. There you go. All right. So what did I do? So I go up to this rehab that I was in. I was considered an alumni, you know. Alumni, I was on that. What did you got? I got 60. That was the shit. So I go to this rehab. Not terrified. And I'm good. That whole mind screwing thing. You start telling yourself, oh, what do I have to offer somebody? Yeah, that's bullshit. And so I go up there. I pray before I get there. To God, if you can use me, use me. Here I am. I'm zero. I've been zero for a long, long time. Hanging out in Valley Hope, and I'm standing there. I'm terrified. Everybody and everything still. Got 2 months of sobriety, and here he comes. This little crackhead. Just burn up, fingertips all. And they asked me to sponsor. And I was like, I stayed at that rehab for like 2 hours that day. And I did the same thing that my sponsor did with me. That all my sponsors did with me. Well, two of them. I read the big book to him, and I stopped on these important parts that I knew that his life was going to depend on. If he followed these things, he could have a spiritual experience. Sponsor him, and it just kind of like a snowball effect. You know, I just got excited. I was like, for the first time, like I had sponsored some guys down here, but it just wasn't quite the same. You know, it wasn't quite the same as getting through and getting a guy through the work, and now all of a sudden he's going to go sponsor guys. Well, hold on a minute, that would make me a grand sponsor. Wow, that's weird. You know, it's no big deal for me today on a given night to sit somewhere and maybe have 3 generations of sponsees in a room. And I've got 17 months of sobriety. That's crazy. That's super crazy. And so it just started this snowball effect, you know. And one of the things, I remember that first day, though, when I walked out of that, this is spiritual experience number one, okay. At 2 months of sobriety, I walked out of Valley Hope in Grapevine, Texas. Wind was blowing. I walked from the door. I was terrified when I got there. I could have probably thrown up in the parking lot. I was so scared to even go up there. I walked from the door to my truck, and I just kind of stopped in the parking lot, and I'm looking around and at the trees, and the wind's blowing, and I'm just like, son of a gun. Everything in my life was okay for a brief moment, you know? And it's not something, I hadn't experienced that kind of spiritual awareness since I was back on that hill over in Lakeside Village years ago. It was the first time in a decade that I had experienced that. And I knew that I had to grab onto it. I knew that I had to grab onto it like my life depended upon it. Because guess what? It did. It did depend on it. The morning that I checked into that rehab, I had a great job, guys. I mean, God had put a job in my life that was awesome, and if I would have used it for the benefit of others and helped people and got this deal, it would have been a great thing. But I abused it so much. I was so sick that I walked in that last day when I went to rehab, and I told the vice president of this company, I just took my last 2 hydrocodone, and I'm going to go through withdrawal here in about 2 or 3 hours, and if you don't let me take a 90-day leave of absence, I will blow my brains out. and I had it all, it was already ready, and there was no doubt in my mind that was going to happen. I knew it was going to happen. And so when I found this solution that they laid out for us, the first 100 laid out, and he broke off a step one, meaning that I knew that I was not going to have the ability to stay sober on my own, that I was going to have to pursue this as if I were dying, man, I did. And it lit a fire under my ass. It really did. About 4 months goes by, and then the idea to, I was sponsoring this cat, and I didn't know what a sober living house was. I didn't have a clue what it was. I was sponsoring this guy, and I was hearing a bunch of craziness and some stuff that was going on in a sober house, and I was like, a sober house, huh? Wow, I got an empty house now. And I picked up the phone, called my sponsor, and he said, oh yeah, you need to talk to these people. They've been doing it for years. And they scooped me up and put me under the, brought me under the wings and showed me what a structured living environment looked like, showed me the rules, all the state regulations and this and that, and do this, and it just kind of grew from there. You know, I thought, well, I'll have 2 or 3 guys in there, you know, and things will be really cool. You know, I'll have a couple friends and help some people, and I'll be able to work, carry this message to some people, and it'll be fun, you know, a little bit. And it just kind of exploded. I mean, God just kind of put all these avenues into my life to where it just became like this thing, you know, and it's like, and that, you know, all these guys that came here tonight, there's only like, well, there's like 3 of them, or oh, there's 4 of them in the room tonight. That, well, there's like all these people that have come through the house, and they still carry the message with us on a regular basis. You know, and they're like knocking on my door, calling me for, you know, commitments, and we need to do this. I need to go carry the message to some cats, and it's like this awesome experience, you know. And I never would have dreamed in a million years that working the steps fast and sponsoring some people and getting out of myself a little bit would lead to this thing that has happened, you know? These cats that are on fire, the cats that have seized this deal with the desperation of drowning men, and now they're doing the same thing. You know, I just wanted to not using drinks, guys. You know, I just wanted to quit drinking. I wanted to quit having my family call me one more time. You know, I just wanted all that to quit. And this thing that God has done has been a truly amazing experience. I have some amazing friends today that I call true friends, that watching their lives change like right before my eyes, and it's like you throw a rock into a pond. It's not just changing this guy. It's changing guys that have kids, family members that are reassembled, and it's like you start, you know, people, it brings tears to my eyes on a regular basis, you know? You start hearing stories of, you know, 7 months ago, this cat, his parents wouldn't even talk to him. They wouldn't lift a finger to help him. They had some really great instruction from Al-Anon. they wouldn't even help him. They're done. Because they knew that if they helped him one more time, he wasn't going to get well, because he wouldn't have that desperation to seek a solution in here. And some truly, truly amazing stories of people that are now sponsoring other guys, you know? Not even, like, I get so excited now about watching my guys sponsoring guys, you know, and I just kind of, I watch these guys and their lives just start changing, and so many awesome things have happened. I could talk for 2 hours about it. I want to read this in closing, and this is the last little thing that I'm going to read. It's really cool. I think you'll like this. It says, I don't believe that there has ever been a method given to man that so enables one of us to be a contributor to life, to our own well-being, and the people about us, as the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And man, that's powerful. Because when we get into this deal and find God and start carrying the message to other guys, like that's what we're supposed to do. Like, I thought that forever, that carrying the message was me showing up at a meeting waiting for that new drunk to walk in the door. Shame on me. Because that's not the deal. There's a guy named Henry, a guy named Bob, and a guy named Fillmore. They drove 670 miles to 12-step, a guy named Bob White in Bosque County when he was a drunk SOB. And look what that guy did. I think he started this group, if I'm not mistaken. I know he started the Brazos Riverside Conference and the Eagle or in the Canyon, maybe even Crested Butte, I don't know. Yeah. Do you think that those cowboys that were over there in wherever, Midland, USA, whatever, Cowboy, Texas, were waiting for somebody to come over and maybe somebody will walk in the room that I can help? Hell no. We have to go out there and find them. It says carry this message. It doesn't say sit in a meeting and wait for somebody to maybe walk in the door one day or not. I got to seek them out. And when I take that action and seek them out, I am now out of myself and I'm doing God's work, what the big book tells me that I have to do. And when we do this, we create a fellowship around us that the big book talks about that will blow your mind. That's all I got. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And next week, Dan will have someone here to speak. He's already pointed to who it's going to be.
Saturday night, it's
going to
be Bobo.
Oh, Bobo. Are there any announcements? Line by line, Tuesday night, 6:30 to 7:30. You betcha. You betcha. And we're going to pass the baskets. Are they out there floating around? Remember that we're self-cleaning through our own contributions, if you would. And our birthday night will be on the last Saturday of this month, which will be Christmas Day that night, and we will have our regular birthday meeting on Christmas Day at 8 o'clock. And now we're going to offer chips. Anybody here celebrating 9 months of continuous sobriety? 6 months? 3 months? 2 months? 1 month? Does anyone have a desire to experience our way of life one day at a time?
All right.
Tell them who you are.
I'm Jason. I'm an alkie.
Hi, Jason. Welcome. Thank you again, Dan, for being here with us. You got a lot of friends here. We're real, real blessed to have you back. And thanks, Paige, for coming. Letting us be with you. Okay, anything else for the good of the meeting? Let's round them up. Can you leave us, please?
With our instant, constant, and abundant source.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day